My name is Scott Berry, and I am the baseball coach at Mayville State University in North Dakota. The presentation today is going to revolve around base running, which I believe happens to be the forgotten offensive weapon. It is my belief that base running is the most overlooked and most underappreciated aspect of offensive baseball. Games can be won by alert, aggressive, heads-up base running. I'd like to review with you what we believe are the 10 commandments of base running in our program. First commandment is you start base running from the bench, and that is by studying the opponent's tendencies and weaknesses. The second commandment is to be aggressive and to be an impact base runner by taking advantage of the opponent's weaknesses. The third commandment is to understand the word reasonable. The fourth commandment is don't run into outs or be doubled off on line drives. The fifth commandment is make your own decisions when running the bases. The sixth commandment is think between pitches about every situation you may encounter while on the bases. The seventh commandment is to execute the techniques that you're taught by your coaching staff. The eighth commandment is to always hustle and to run smart. The ninth commandment is to know where the defense is positioned, the game score, the hitting count, the number of outs, and the inning. And the 10th commandment is to know where the baseball is at all times. I would also like to visit today about what you would do from the bench. We noted in one of the commandments that doing work from the bench is probably going to be the most important thing that you can do. We also think that the bench work includes any prior scouting report that you may have on your opposition that's going to help you gain an advantage during the course of that game. The major question that you want to ask during that bench work or during that scouting period is, how talented and disciplined and prepared and fundamentally sound is your opponent? Some of the things that you should be working on observing from the dugout is to look at pitchers' tendencies. Observe as many pitching tendencies as you can. Some of the things that I think you should be looking for are the types of pickoffs that the pitcher uses, the type of quickness that the pitcher has to the plate, what kind of wildness tendencies does he have when delivering the ball to the plate, is his composure good on the mound, and does the pitcher tip off any pitches that he might be delivering to the hitter. Another part of the bench work would be to observe catcher tendencies. When you observe a catcher from the bench or in an advanced scouting report, we want to look at their arm strength and their release and accuracy of their throws. We also want to look at how quick that they get rid of the ball. Another thing we observe is their blocking ability. Do they do a good job? Are they adequate at doing this? How well prepared are they to do an excellent job behind the plate? And if they don't, can we take advantage of it? How attentive is the catcher? Is he paying attention to you? Is he paying attention to the other base runners? Can we exploit any weakness here? Also, we're going to look at whether or not he spends a lot of time going to his knees and possibly throwing from his knees. And also, we're going to try to take a peek at any signals that he may be giving and check to see whether or not he hides them effectively or not. If he doesn't, then we're going to be able to get tipped off to certain things like that. Does the catcher vary any of the sequences of things that he does? Does he move into catching position in a different way, or does he follow the same type of pattern all the time? Does he tip his pitches in any of the way that he positions himself behind the plate? These are all things that we can gain information on and use it to our advantage in running the bases. Another thing that we can observe are infield tendencies. As base runners and as a team, we can observe whether or not the middle infielders are lazy. Do they stand around? Do they back up plays? Do they cover bases? We want to pick up on those points. Do they turn double play pivots in any particular way? Do they use the same type of approach? Do they back away from the bag? Do they go to the outfield side? How often do they go to the infield side or the third base side when they're turning pivots? Those are things that you want to pick up on. How well do they throw under stress, particularly in cutoff situations? Do we know during pregame warm-up or from previous games that they don't tend to throw the ball as well when they're under stressful types of situations? If this is the case, we want to take advantage of it. Some tendencies we also want to observe from the bench or a scouting reporter: what the outfielders do. Are they also lazy? Do they not get around? Do they fail to back up bases? What kind of arm strength do they have? Are they accurate with their throws? Are they quick with their throws? Are they quick getting to the ball? Again, some of these things are things that we want to take advantage of. Another point that we want to observe in outfielders is, do they hustle to get behind the ball and get themselves into good throwing position? Sometimes you'll note that outfielders camp underneath the ball and maybe catch the ball flat-footed or on their heels. We want to take advantage of this so we can move up an extra base. And how well do they have the ability to throw the ball to cut off man or to bases while they're under stress? Sometimes these kids look real good in pregame warm-up, but sometimes when they're put under stress, they have a more difficult time executing the skill they need to execute. I'd like to start out with base running from home plate. The first demonstration I'd like to be able to illustrate for you here, we'll have one of our young players take a swing and hit a pitch, and then we want him to run down the baseline and hit the base going full speed, and then use a certain shuffle technique to slow himself down. So we'll take a moment to observe Tony going through this procedure. The second technique we'd like to show from home plate would be a hitter hitting a ground ball base hit to the left side, but obviously, you know, a hitter doesn't always know if that ball's going through, so you're going to notice in this technique that he's going to bear down the line like the ball's going to be fielded by an infielder, then he's going to round the base accordingly. Take a look at what Matt does here. The third technique we'll utilize from home plate is going to be when the ball is hit in the air or a line drive that's hit for a base hit. We know that the ball is not going to be caught by a fielder, so we're going to immediately run out to a point about 12 feet off the baseline, halfway between home plate and first base, and then round the base accordingly. And Mike will show us this technique. The final point I'd like to make in dealing with base running from home plate is that we need to establish a mentality with our team, and I hope that you do with yours, that to get extra bases, the very first step is the most important step that you're going to possibly make. So keep in mind, the first step has to be the best step, and it has to be the fastest step, and then everything has to remain at that level throughout the course of you running the bases. I'd like to take the opportunity to demonstrate some of the fundamentals that we're going to practice at first base in practicing our base running skills. And the first thing I'd like to be able to show you is how to establish developing a lead. Now, the first thing we're going to do with Matt here is we're going to tell him to put his feet on the edge of the base, and then he's going to lay down and extend his arms. And now he's going to get up, measure that spot, and put his left foot on the marking there. What we'd like to demonstrate to people is that's how far you can get off of first base when getting your lead, because essentially all you're going to have to do now is to turn and lay back down and get safely to first base. So our players now know that this is the absolute minimal lead that you would establish at first base. The next point we'd like to make when establishing a lead, now that we've developed how far we can get off, now Matt's going to use proper leadoff step technique to get out to his natural lead. As you can see by Matt's lead, he's gotten to the point where he set his original lead, and we can probably encourage him to even increase his lead even more. Once we establish that natural lead for each of our players. The next thing we want to do is become a little bit more aggressive. And by taking a one-way lead, we're going to try to establish what kind of pickoff moves are the opposing pitchers have, so we can gather more information and use it further on down the line during the course of the game. The one-way lead is a lead that we're going to extend out a little bit further than the natural lead that a person takes, and then we're going to put ourselves in a lean back position so we can get back quickly into first base to make sure that we don't get picked off. Okay, once we've established our lead again and we've gone through a one-way lead, we've got the information we need to know what the pitcher's got, or at least feel a little bit more comfortable in seeing his different pickoff moves. Now that we've established the lead, we still may get some pickoff attempts. In this case, we're going to demonstrate how a person's going to return to the bag standing up. There's a couple of different techniques that he'll demonstrate. One is where he's going to go back into the bag with his left foot, and his right foot's going to trail behind. And what that allows him to do is, in the case there's a wild throw to the first baseman where he has to go across the bag to field it, he's got himself in a support position that's going to block off the first baseman to go after that ball. The second technique that he'll demonstrate back-to-back will be going back into the base with his left foot and then swinging in a more traditional return to the base, swinging his right foot back around to the outfield side. In our natural progression here, you can see that the plays are getting a little bit closer at first base, so we have to go a step beyond what we would be doing regarding standing up and going back into the base. So in this case now, we want to be able to go back into the base, and we're going to have to get there a little bit more quickly, so we're going to have to dive back into first base. The secondary lead is the type of lead you get once the ball is being delivered to the plate. We've shown you a variety of returns to the bag based on a pitcher making a throw back to pick you off. But in this case now, we're going to practice a secondary lead whereby the ball is being delivered to the plate. But the key thing we want to keep in mind in here is that you get out to a position away from the base that's a reasonable distance for you to safely return back to the bag. The things that you have to keep in mind now is during a one-way lead and during our regular leads, we got off a reasonable distance whereby if the pitcher made their best pickoff move, we'd get back into the nick of time. Now, in a secondary lead, the word reasonable is being used in regards to the abilities of the catcher. How well can the catcher throw? So based on Matt's running ability and the abilities of the catcher, that's where you establish reasonable for him as an individual, and then it gives you an opportunity to not only stop and be in a position to advance to the next base, but it allows you an opportunity if the hitter does not hit the pitch to get back into first base safely. In a steal break situation, we practice a technique that we call take the money and run. This technique allows us to swing our body and get it into a position as quickly as we possibly can to second base. As you can see by the technique that Mike's demonstrating, he's going to quickly grab the money with his left hand, and that money is going to be located out in front of his body to his right, and then he's going to pull back and get his body into position. As you can see by that quick movement gets his body and his chest pointed towards second base, his body's turned, and now he's got that type of lean you need to be able to take off and sprint towards second base. Now let's take a look at Mike doing the same concept, but actually going through with the actual steal portion of moving on to second base. The next aspect of base running that I'd like to cover with you is what we call the delay steal. The delay steal is a technique that we use when the pitcher delivers the ball to the plate. Our base runner is going to take three shuffle hops, long shuffle hops, to get himself distanced towards second base. Those three hops should occur during the time when the ball is in the process of traveling to the catcher. We do this timing dependent upon the speed of the pitcher delivering the ball. With a pitcher that throws the ball harder, maybe it's going to be a two hop. With a ball that's being delivered by somebody that throws the ball slower, we're going to deal with a three hop. So during this process, we're going to time it so our right foot is landing on that last hop when the ball is passing through the hitting zone. At that time, everybody on the field is distracted, but our base runner has got himself a real good lead and has put himself in a position to advance towards second base before the defense can be aware of what is going on. Mike will demonstrate this technique. The last point I want to make at first base is that as a base runner, we want to find every conceivable way we can to get ourselves out of a force-out situation and to get ourselves into scoring position. That is really a major goal of our offense. So by doing that, we're going to try to read balls in the dirt that have been thrown by the pitcher. We're going to try to check to see if the catcher's being a bit lazy back there, plus some of the things that we talked about earlier in the video. At second base, there's a variety of techniques that we want to practice, but I believe the most important thing that we can start out with in regards to base running is how does a base runner get a read off the pitcher? You know, there's a lot of confusion out there, and when you've got people that are behind you and people that you can't see moving behind you, it gets to be a very scary proposition for the base runner. The things we try to teach our base runners are this. Nothing can happen on the baseball playing field without the baseball. So we think it's critically important that the base runners spend all of their time concentrating on where the ball is at. As long as they do that, and along with a little help from their base coaches to know where the middle infielders are at or what they're doing, I think that the base runner is going to be in a real good position to not only advance but also to score. In regards to actual base running efforts, at second base, the type of lead that we're going to get when we're in a force out type of position or if we're looking to steal a base is that we're going to put the base runner in a direct line between second and third. As you take a look at what Matt is doing here, you can see that he's standing in a straight line between second and third. The next type of lead that we'd like to demonstrate at second base is what we call our two-out lead or our run-scoring lead. And Mike's going to demonstrate that what we want to do is we want to get ourselves behind the baseline now so that we have good angles in running to third base and trying to score. What happens in a force-out lead is you have to angle out and then come back towards the base to attempt to score. Of course, it's great if you've gotten yourself a base hit, but our ideal position when we're not in a force-out type of situation is to get behind the base. That positioning is going to put you about 8 to 10 feet on the outfield side of second base, and then we're going to get about 8 to 10 feet or whatever is reasonable for that particular base runner, and he's going to position himself in that type of area. The one advantage to this is you tend to keep the shortstop behind you and you have a little better feel for where he's at, and your peripheral vision in looking at the second baseman to know where he's at gives the base runner a certain degree of comfort as well as they're watching the pitcher to see if he might possibly make a pickoff to second base. Another technique that we use with some of our quicker base runners, or if we feel we can exploit the opponent's defense during certain situations of a game, is what we call overextending a lead. What we're going to do in this case is we're going to overextend the lead to bait the catcher into making a long throw down to second base. What that does is it gives us two long throws to advance a runner from second to third, and that's a situation that we're looking for. So basically what's going to happen is our base runner is going to, he could be in a two-out lead or our run scoring lead, or he could be in a force out lead. Nevertheless, what he's going to do is he's going to overextend and get himself well beyond the point of reasonable and get beyond that safe point for him as a base runner. And then he's going to take one step back towards second base as the catcher is making a throw, and then make a break for third base. So we'll see a demonstration here by Tony what it would be in a simulated situation. No matter what base you're going to be running from, you're going to run into situations whereby your base runners are going to wonder what they need to do in a fly ball type of situation. And some of the things that I try to point out to our kids during fly ball situations is the questions come up, should I stay, should I go, how far do I go? Just to give you a little explanation of what I think's effective in these types of situations is when you're a base runner, you get yourself off the base as reasonably far as you can so that if the ball is caught, you can get back to the base safely. That means that you're going to have to push yourself beyond limits that you might be comfortable. I like our players that when they're hustling back to first base, for example, they have to run, sprint, dive back into the base. Now, we don't want them to be unreasonable with their approach, but we just want to make sure that in a fly ball situation, they get as far off the base as they possibly can and still safely return with a sprint and a dive back into the base. You're going to run into other base running situations as well. You're going to get outfielders pursuing the ball on the run. And we again tell our players, make sure to get as far off as you possibly can and still safely get back to the base. But in some cases, especially with balls that have been hit into the gap or have been hit deep in big ballparks, we want them to get as far off as is reasonable. But as they see the outfielder getting closer to making that catch, then we want them to get closer to the base. So in the event the catch is made, they can still run back to the base, take the base, and advance to the base that is closer to home plate. So in this case, this is normally going to happen at second base, but it can happen at first base as well. The key point to keep in mind there, we get off as far as is reasonably possible, but in a tag-up situation, then we want to make sure that we make our way back to the bag the closer the fielder gets to catching the ball, put ourselves in a tag situation so we can advance to either third or to home. Now that we've gotten ourselves to third base, we have some other techniques that we like to practice while running the bases. At third base, the first thing that we want to emphasize is that you're one step away from scoring. We really, really don't want to make any critical mistakes by getting picked off or to do something that's not very sensible over there. We don't want to overextend our leads. We want to be much more sensible and a bit more conservative when we're at third base. To some people, that conservative talk tends to be to lack aggression. In our case, we're not going to lose any aggressiveness. We've just gotten ourselves to the point we want to be, and there's a lot of different ways that you can score from third base. We're going to look to take advantage of all of those and do appropriate and proper base running. The first technique I'd like to demonstrate as we try to advance to home is to put ourselves in a position whereby when the ball passes through the hitting zone, our base runner has their feet in proper position. So we try to get them into a lead, and then we do a three-step dance, so to speak, to get ourselves in the proper position when the ball passes through the hitting zone to try to score. One of the common errors made at third base during base running is base runners who see fly balls or line drives hit, they take off immediately for home. That's taboo in our program, and I hope it's taboo in yours as well. What we want to teach our base runners to do, as soon as they see a ball hit with any kind of up angle, we want them to return immediately to the bag. So what we're going to demonstrate here is a situation whereby we do the three-step process, the ball is hit, and now we return to the bag. We want to face the ball in any tag ball situations, and that's the same at any other base that we have. You always want to face the ball with your chest and put the appropriate foot on the base. In this case, at third base, any ball that's in fair territory, the left foot's going to be on the bag, and they're going to face the ball with their head at least. If the ball is in foul territory down the left field line, they'll put their right foot on the bag and they'll turn and watch the ball accordingly. But in this example, Mike will do a three-step lead, and then he'll return to the base on the fly ball or the up-angle ball that's been hit, and then tag up and score. Some other points that we want to make while running at third base is oftentimes there'll be multiple base runners on the base, and as a base runner at third base, although we're really close to home plate to score, you may have a first and third situation and there's no outs. So what ends up happening here is if you're the runner at third base, we want to advocate to you that you take off for home on a ground ball, even if it's to the third baseman, so you encourage him to throw the ball to the plate. That way, you may have made an out at the plate, but you've kept the other team from getting one of those precious outs that you want to save, and then you now have base runners at first and second. So as a base runner at third, that's a valuable contribution that you can make in those types of situations, but you need to be prepared for that when the situation arises. During squeeze bunt situations, we have a few things that we like to advocate to our base runners. Again, the word that's come up so often during the course of this discussion is the word reasonable. We use the word reasonable because we advocate that the base runner leave at the latest possible moment they can to score in a squeeze bunt. In doing so, our fast runners can wait probably until the pitcher's front foot lands. But if you have somebody a bit slower, you're going to have them take off when the foot is probably a foot or a little bit more before the landing spot. The whole key in the squeeze bunt situation is that the runner at third do everything according to normal operating procedure and advance in as inconspicuous way as he possibly can. So the thing we advocate here is making sure to leave at a reasonable time, make sure not to tip it off, and to wait to that last possible moment you can before you begin advancing to the plate. While advancing to home, we also want to advocate that you slide feet first into home plate. Now we know that the situation doesn't always permit this to happen, but the thing that we find out happening with kids that slide head first or hands first into home plate is they oftentimes come out of it not doing very well. They jam fingers or even break fingers, and it's a situation that incapacitates them. So the thing that we want to advocate is go feet first so you avoid all that gear that the catcher's wearing that can do possible damage to you as you're attempting to score. Another point regarding base running I'd like to go over with you is the art of sliding. You don't see a lot of people talking about the art of sliding, and I'm not going to spend a particular amount of time either. But what I've seen over the years is there's two basic sliding techniques that are used, the head first slide and the figure four slide. There's variations of all these that get used, but I think the important thing for you to understand here is the pros and cons of all of them. Obviously, with the head first slide, you're going to get there and your hands are going to be touching the base. Keep in mind that you've got the defender's cleats there and people jumping around that you can possibly do damage to your hands, and we want you to watch out with that. We try to advocate the figure four slide as much as we can because it also serves as a pop-up type of slide for balls that get overthrown, and you can get to your feet quicker and advance to the next base. An important point to keep in mind when we're discussing slides is the purpose that it holds. For sliding, we have to keep in mind that you utilize a slide to slow yourself down when you're running the bases, or to avoid a tag. Those are really the two predominant purposes that you have. As base runners, we need not forget that. Sometimes you see a lot of kids out there running the bases and they try to slow down standing up, and for me, I really have a tough time understanding that. Secondly, they really put themselves in a position that they jeopardize giving away outs, and then that really disappoints me. So in our squad, our kids understand that it's very important to utilize a slide and to do it properly, so as to help them slow down, to help them avoid tags, and to put themselves in a position where they can possibly pop up and advance to another base quickly. So for our purposes, understanding what the slide is for is the most important thing. We've talked about the different types of slides that can get used. The most predominant slide and the one preferred in our program is a figure four slide. And what I'd like to be able to do is to have one of our ball players demonstrate for you on the ground what a figure four slide looks like. I was taught at a very young age how to slide, and this is the basic way that we were shown. And our coach showed us to just sit on the ground, to get our feet into proper position, and then gradually build up into this. If you're afraid to slide, I advocate doing the same thing. We have kids coming even into the college level that have a tough time sliding, so we'll put them into this type of position so they can feel what's going on and then ultimately utilize it to their advantage when they progress through the stages of our program. So we'll take the time right now to have Mike demonstrate for you from the ground what a figure four slide looks like. A couple of points to make regarding what Mike demonstrated for us is you noted that the legs were curled in a position that looked like a four. He was laid back flat, his arms were thrown back, and his front leg was flexed. From this type of position, you can see where it'd be difficult for a person to put a tag on you, but then again, you have your feet out front to be able to touch the base. This is why I like this position. The only variation that you would have in a pop-up slide is that you would be sitting a little bit more upright, and that actually helps you slow down and then pop up to your feet. So to avoid a tag, you'd use the technique that was shown there. To slow down and to pop up and to possibly advance, you'd use a little bit more of a sitting motion in that figure four to do that technique. The last points I'd like to make is that in running to first base, we want to point out to you that we think the quickest way to get to first base is by running through the base. We really encourage you to not slide in that type of position unless you absolutely have to. Oftentimes you'll see a kid running down the first baseline and a throw takes the first baseman off the bag, normally to the home plate side whereby he catches a ball and then he swings at the runner to try to tag him out. In most cases, base runners are standing up while this happened and they get tagged out, and then people get upset because the base runner didn't slide to get into the base. This is a very difficult maneuver, but one that can be done by base runners that are alert. What we advocate that the base runner do in running to first base is we just tell them to observe what the first baseman's doing. And if he observes that the first baseman's coming off the bag, then we tell them to break down and to get into a figure four slide, go underneath them. This may put them short of the base, but the first baseman's momentum will be carrying him towards home plate, and ultimately you should be able to do a pop-up slide and then get into first base safely. I don't advocate that you do any sliding into first base with your hands, because I think most of you who followed professional baseball have seen a number of instances in the last few years whereby professional players have hurt themselves in doing so. One time that we do advocate sliding into first base is in a squeeze bunt type of situation. Sometimes it's distracting for the first baseman in this type of mode to slide into first base off of a bunt, and it distracts the first baseman from observing the guy going from second base to home. That might be another instance that you might use, but there's very few instances that you'd incorporate the slide going into first base. The one last point that I'd like to make, and I really strongly encourage any young base runner to take heed to this point, and that is, when in doubt, slide. If you're trying to decide whether to stand up or to slide going into the base, always utilize the slide. I've seen kids in many instances whereby they've tried standing up in the last second have slid, they've injured themselves, they've been tagged out, they've done something that hasn't been positive for their team. There's nothing to be hurt by sliding into the base, and we want to strongly encourage it. So what we tell our players is, when in doubt of standing up or sliding, always slide. There's a few general base running rules that I'd like to talk about to conclude this discussion on base running. A few points that I'd like to make include, you want to make sure that you run full speed and make outfielders stop you from advancing. Oftentimes you'll see players, they hit the ball and they think the fielder's going to field it and they jog to first base or jog to the bases. What we like our our players to know, or what we want them to understand, is there's a potential for a bobbled ball or a mistake being made in the outfield at all times. So we want you running full speed at all times until the fielder stops you from doing so. Look for any bobbled ball that you get, or mishandled ball or lazy throw that you can observe, and then try to get yourself to the next possible base. Also, whenever outfielders are out of position to throw, look to advance. The one point that comes to mind very clearly for me is when you see an outfielder catching a fly ball in a flat-footed or heel-back position. If an outfielder is not getting behind the ball and moving their body forward to gather momentum to throw, they're going to have a difficult time coming up and making a good strong throw to get you out. So we always advise our base runners to take advantage of outfielders who are too lazy to get behind the ball. In any other base running situation, or in many base running situations, get off the base in a reasonable fashion. We've talked about this before, but we want you, according to your abilities, to determine what distance you can safely get off the base and run the bases effectively. The abilities of your opposition and yourself and your abilities in the game situations will help dictate what it is you do regarding reasonable base running. The further you can get from the bag, the closer you are to getting to scoring position. Ask yourself this question: how far can I advance and reasonably get off the base and sprint back and get back safely to the bag with a dive back into that particular base? That is what you want to use as a guide in determining how far you want to get off the base in fly ball situations. In tag situations, we tell the people to tag when outfielders are in a sure catch position. If they're not in a sure catch position, in other words, if they're running or to chase a ball down in the gap, or if the ball's been hit in front of them or from side to side where they really have to hustle to get after the ball, this doesn't necessarily apply. Another rule does. But if they're in a sure catch situation, and again, you want to take the skills that you have and the skills of your opponent and determine what it is that you want to do. If that ball is fairly deep, you've got an average arm, you've got pretty good speed, you want to be in a tag-up situation looking to advance to the best of your ability. Let's move on to the example I stated before. If you've got a ball hit in the gap, we want you to get off the base as far as you can according to where the defender is in accordance to the ball. So if you can visualize a ball in the gap and an outfielder chasing it, you're going to get off as far from the base that you're on as is reasonable according to where that outfielder is to the ball. Now, you may also note that that outfielder is getting closer to catching that ball. The closer he gets to catching that ball, the closer we want to get back to the base. You may find that the outfielder makes a sensational catch in the gap, and if you are doing what you should be doing and getting closer to the bag, you might have to run back to the bag 15 feet, but you still have time to tag in advance. That's the key point that I'm making. Sometimes kids will get 60, 70 feet off the base, and then they just stand there until the ball is caught, and then they have to revert back to second or first base, and they don't get a chance to advance. If you're utilizing your skills, including your visual skills appropriately, you're going to be able to gain yourself some advantages in this kind of situation. Another point I'd like to make is that good base running and base stealing is not something that's reserved for fast runners. Oftentimes, kids look at good base running and base stealing to be left up to those that have good running speed. The point we want to make with our team is that every single player needs to be an impact on the bases. It is not reserved for fast runners. We want them all to believe that they can get the job done, that they can make a positive contribution, and we want them to believe that they can make a positive difference in the outcome of the game just based on their ability to run the bases. With that type of attitude, you're going to get people that are going to be more aggressive, and people that, although they may not be hitting the ball very well, they do know that once they get on base that they can put the pressure on the opposition to maybe force them into some kind of mistake or to put us in a position where we maybe score or at least get ourselves in the scoring position. If you can take that type of attitude out onto the base pass, believe me, you're going to have a squad that's going to be very aggressive and very successful. I wish you the best of luck in incorporating these different drills and these different techniques, and I look forward to hearing about all the runs that you're going to be scoring in your upcoming games. Thank you.